Hey folks, welcome to the show. Hey Sharad, my usual unimaginative question. How's it going?
And I have a very unimaginative answer to that. It's going very well. And I'm excited for today's show as well. And while we were talking with Sandesh, I mean, you'll probably introduce him in a bit. But one thing I've noticed, people with finance backgrounds, they love recurring cash flow, SaaS-based type businesses, right? And the cash is king comes out very often.
Absolutely. And we also light up when we talk to them. With that being said, it gives us great pleasure to bring on board Sandesh Chitnis, CEO of Core Integra. Core Integra is at the most broad level is a technology-led HR services company. But what we are very interested to discuss today with Sandesh is about their recent foray into a SaaS-based offering, looking at regulatory and compliance issues of various corporates. Sandesh, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nikhil, and thank you, Sharad. I appreciate that. And just a quick two-liner in terms of introduction. My name is Sandesh Chitnis. I'm the CEO for the last 10 years in Core Integra. So just one small statement there. While we focus on the labor law compliance aspect of the technology piece as well. So we are predominantly into three line of businesses. The labor law compliance is staffing and payroll processing as well. Just wanted to make that statement so that we are aware.
No, absolutely. So I mean, I guess the staffing and the talent acquisition part probably is the more was probably a starting point for you, I imagine. And that being said, let's start with the Control F. I think that's something we'd love to know a bit more about. You have described it as India's first leading SaaS-based compliance platform. You have, I think, 500-plus client base, across sectors. Sectorally, you're agnostic. And that's something that you also threw at the beginning of the conversation. Just want to kind of, take a more broader view before we get into Control F, because compliance is such a big universe in its own. There is obviously a cost center base of compliance, things like taxation, secretarial compliance, accounting, and more sector specific, be it in financial services, insurance, banking, etc. And then there is a revenue side of compliance, right, which is more about customer onboarding, more about making sure that there are enough fraud checks in place, KYCs, which obviously I think for us it's very relatable in a sector like financial services. And we have seen there are various companies and players who are operating all over, right? But more on the revenue side and less on the cost side, right? I mean, I think the revenue side of the spectrum, if you look at, companies like Credit Vidya, IDFI, Digio, they have picked very specific use cases within this and are focusing on that, right? Be it verification, be it Aadhaar, KYC, et cetera, whereas when we were reading about Control F, that seems like a very, I would say broad spectrum play. Right. So would love to kind of, hear from you. Is our understanding even correct? And if it's not, would love to, get some color from you.
Sure, Nikhil. So your understanding is correct. Okay, but I'll answer this question slightly differently. Right. So when we talk about today's Control F sort of positioning, while we speak about SaaS, I think that was not how it was sort of conceptualized when we started looking at it in 2014. Okay. So as you rightly said, labor law itself is a very complex matter and a subject, right? Not easy for somebody to understand. Becomes all the more difficult the moment a client is present across all the states. And this is where it came to actually, because when 2014, we were serving clients which had presence across the country. What we realized is the visibility, which was typically for a person sitting in a central office, was not there because they were talking to us. And I used to tell them, okay, your state is, out of, 29 states, your 6 states are compliant, maybe 4 are not, 20 are partly compliant. And that was just a statement and an Excel that used to go.
Got it.
But what we realized is the process that was taking to make that entire journey was the longer period, right? So that is when we started thinking and deliberating in terms of how we could solve that problem. And I'll give you a used case because that probably helped without naming the client. So this client we were working with had almost, what, about 400, 500 branches across the country. And there's something called, we need to prepare statutory registers after, completion of that month and the payroll data.
Yeah.
And for us to prepare those registers for those 400, 500 branches used to take anything between 45 to 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And which is what we realized that actually the next month has come and by the time we have not even completed the earlier month's activity, right? Mm-hmm. So this is what triggered typically a requirement or a need of, the compliance technology part.
Mm-hmm.
And we started working on this. So it was a gradual process that we started with one aspect of shop and establishment. And then, when it evolved in a year or two, technically speaking, that 45, 60 days for 400 branches converted into almost 45 minutes to 60 minutes.
Mm.
So that was the magnitude of change that I was talking about. And that is what has been brought in. Is the complete process of the journey completed? The answer is no. Because as you know, technology keeps evolving. And even today, we are talking about adding AIs and machine learnings and RPAs into it. But the process keeps evolving and the system is, and the application is still evolving. So that's what the control layer journey was. And while, we started looking at control layer, it was never discussed and conceptualized for a SaaS product.
Got it.
It was trying to bring internal efficiencies for our operations team.
Right.
So how do they make their job easier, accurate, all of that put together? That's how we started looking at it. And then after a point, we started realizing that this is something that can be used because a smaller organization where, they don't need to really outsource this activity because it can be managed by somebody internally with a team of one or two.
Mm-hmm.
All that they need technically is a tool to manage that.
Right.
And that's how we did it.
So, when it's interesting, it's sort of you're digitizing it and using tech to replace that outsourcing activity with an in-house one person and a tool, right? Is that articulating that to your ultimate customer? Is that a challenge? Because the reason I ask is, like Nikhil also talked about it, you are selling a service which is reducing burden and subsequently reducing cost for your clients. Is that easy for them to intuitively understand? Because it's very easy when you say that by doing this, you're going to get more revenue. That part is easy. But somewhat like an insurance, like people buy it to prevent the future cash outflow. So do you see that it's a challenge to explain that to some of the customers that once you get that tool, you're going to save X amount of man hours, you're going to save X amount in cost? Like, is that a challenge to sell that?
So, Sharath, I think so. It has not evolved to that level yet. I mean, from a compliance standpoint, I will be very honest. While there are organizations who have started looking at this product on a SaaS basis, but I think compliance is still a complex subject where they prefer outsourcing this activity to an expert.
Right.
And which is where we come in play. While there are smaller organizations who are happy to use this on a SaaS model,
yeah,
and it's evolving, and I'm sure at the point it's going to go beyond that as well. But, the advisory piece, I think will never go, at least for the next few years, like I can see.
Right.
Because the complexity and understanding of that labor law itself resides with us. So while a tool can help you execute what we have to, but the nuances behind that is something only we can explain, or the experts can, or the domain can.
Yes.
Right? So that's how it is. While, the industry to an extent is sort of evolving to start, accepting the SaaS tool for technology, for compliances.
Yeah.
I don't think so. It has reached that level yet. And now, with this the wage code changes happening, all of that is creating more complexity. People are waiting. And hence, it's still moving as an enabler to the execution services rather than a complete SaaS product.
Understood. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I actually was curious to you use the word yourself. Do you see yourself sort of as an advisory business in terms of, compliance, governance seems like it can be automated because it's very rules driven. Laws can be sort of as much as you can put like checks and balances and sort of it can tell you what is right, what is optimum. But the advisory angle, that's sort of where perhaps the real differentiation is, right?
Absolutely, Sharat. In fact, the aspirations for us is going to be at some point, when the compliance industry evolves to a level where things are simplified and everything gets managed through, the portal itself. all that we'll need to probably do is provide that advisory that we're talking about. Because there would be certain things which go beyond the tool part of it. That's the only level that we probably see in the next few years. Technology will continue to be there because the changes are inevitable. It will keep coming. We are talking about laws and acts which were formed like about 70, 80, 90, 100 years back.
Yeah.
And now the changes are happening, right? So the changes are going to be over a period of time understood by the people and then actually implemented all of that. I think it's going to take time. But the advisory piece is something that we keep seeing ourselves for the future.
So, I mean, is it right to say that yours is a solutions-led technology offering and when you acquire customers, it's more of an assisted sales type of a process? In a sense, there is always a human at the other end, that's where the journey starts. And the tool obviously adds like a optimization play. And there might be some customers who will directly like to, use the SaaS for offering. Is that accurate in terms of the staging where we are?
Nikhil, partly it is. The way it is at this point of time, while we are talking about an end-to-end compliance, and I can give you some background to it, maybe that helps in terms of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
The labor law compliance is typically is largely a post-facto compliance that we talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, because what happens largely, your payroll and your attendance and all of these processes are completed by end of the month, right? Mm-hmm. So which means you have paid the salary.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to do the compliances for the last month.
Yes.
Now for that, there could be various areas that you're non-compliant. And I could give an example where, there are minimum wages stipulated by the states and somebody has not paid that minimum wages. How would I catch that? I will catch it only when I do the compliance.
Right.
Now, by then, the damage is already done. So you have to rectify it for the next month.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be some manual intervention because I have to keep informing the payroll team or the client's payroll team saying, this is where you have gone wrong.
Right.
So this is where you have to correct yourself to actually be compliant for the next month.
Right.
So that piece remains. Unless at a point I realize, in future it could be also be, all these systems start talking to each other, the corrections also happening. But I think it's a journey that we need.
Yeah.
And labor law is the prime focus as we speak.
For us, labor law and payroll processing also. So we do payroll processing. Again, this is something that we started about a couple of years back. This was almost a decision we had to take because most of the clients that we were serving compliances,
mm-hmm.
they started asking, why don't you do payroll? Because we are giving you that information. The information is available with you for payroll processing. You can take right up to the level of compliances as well.
Right.
Because it's actually the start. It's a precursor to compliances. We do the payroll processing and then the compliance come along with that.
Right. And I guess the temp staffing and the talent acquisition part, it acts like part of the customer funnel, right? At the end of the day.
So talent acquisition, we don't do for external customers yet.
Right.
For the staffing, we do because we have to source resources for the staffing company as well.
Right.
And not real time approach. Yeah.
Yeah. Just for the sake of our readers and for ourselves as well, let's take an example to see how it would work. Let's say I'm an EPC contractor and I'm in the business of installing rooftop solar panels for guys. And I have, a number of guys who actually go to the houses, assess it, and then deploy the solution. At what stage am I interacting with this SaaS offering with Core Integra? Like, am I inputting the data of how much I'm paying each worker on a day? Am I then, I'm trying to understand how the touch point is with your customer.
Sure. Okay. So, Sharad, I'll start from the beginning in terms of giving the background, right?
Yeah.
So, the example that you gave me is typically a principal employer, for example, engaging a contractor to do a certain level of activity.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, while a principal employer who's responsible for that activity and asking a vendor or a contractor to do it is equally liable as far as their compliances are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So our SaaS product technically starts from the time that principal employer engages with a contractor as well, right? So all of the information or the KYC has to be done in the system. That is something which is available. So we onboard a contractor onto the system.
Mm-hmm.
And then the contractor has to onboard their employees because he'll need people to actually do the installations there.
Yes.
Right? So he has to get those people as well. So the system allows you to onboard those employees as well, okay? Next step comes when the wage has to be processed. So attendance has to be marked. So all of these can be marked in the system as well. And the wage processing can also happen. And the system is capable to actually understand if that person is not paying the minimum wages as per the state's stipulated minimum wage, then it starts throwing you that exception as well.
Okay.
And then the moment it is completed, there are next steps of compliances that he needs to do. Now, all of these things, a principal employer is equally liable. So he needs to actually know that the contractor or the vendor that he is engaged with is actually compliant.
Right.
And all of these things can be known if he has this tool with him.
Yes.
Because it's all giving you the triggers.
No, just, you know, kind of an extended thought on that. I mean, when it comes to the tool itself, I mean, there must be instances where you are processing the payroll, right? So you actually have access to all the data internally. It's inputted through your own system one way or the other, right? But you must be often meeting companies and clients who have legacy systems, right? Who have third-party payroll processing platforms, etc., right? So are there like API integrations through which you fetch the data and you're able to see whether, is that how it works? Or you like to look at things on an end-to-end basis only?
Yeah, so I was saying it works both ways. So there are situations where the client has engaged with us from the beginning of the payroll processing as well, right, which takes them right to the compliances, which is the end result.
Right.
And there are situations where they are actually doing the payroll processing through other vendors or other systems,
right,
where we can actually do an API level integration.
Right.
Okay. And we have done that with multiple service providers in the industry. Mm. There are two ways of doing the integration. One could be a very, very tight level integration where the information flows directly from the system and it comes to the compliance system that we have.
Right.
The preference that we always give is not a very tight level integration, but a flat file-based integration. There are two reasons why we say that. One, at any point of time, the point of failure is actually easily recognized. Okay. So what happens is that information from an X system flows and stays and resides in a particular file or a location, and my system goes and picks it up from there.
Right.
So at any point of time, it's easier for me to know when the failure has happened in case the system or the information has not flown in correctly.
Right.
Tight integration becomes slightly difficult because the system and the data has flown in. We don't know whether the calculation at my end has been incorrect or the data that has come from the other system is incorrect.
Got it.
But both levels of integrations are something that we do and it's possible.
You know, Nikhil and I also discuss about it when we talk about digitization in India. Obviously, there's a digitization push. But, you know, when we compare, and you have a very similar background, like when we look at financial statements from a developed market, right, it's easy to read it. It's more structured. It's when it's just digital copy, it's actually a PDF. In fact, I remember in Canada before leaving in 2017, like companies were reporting their annual reports in Excel format as well. So in India, a lot of times that digitization is just taking a picture from your phone and then uploading it, right? It's a scanned copy as such. That's a big challenge, is it, to actually interpret? And a lot of policies as well, we see often are scanned documents which are just uploaded on the on websites, right? So how does, is that a challenge or is there a manual layer there of someone actually looking at it?
No, it is a challenge, Sharad, for example. Okay, but I'll give you this answer in 2 bits as well. Right. When we're talking about digitization and especially in labor law, I can give you a number which obviously will be something I don't know whether you have heard. Right. So from 2014, typically we must have digitized almost 967 statutory formats of the registers that have been given by the states of India. Every state has different formats. Some are bilingual, some are, and it's very complex. So it's not simple, 10 fields into it and you're done. A very complex one. So 967 formats for us to digitize itself took a lot of time. Okay. And then to ensure that the data that we are pulling in from any of the system gets populated correctly in the right fields in those, 30, 40, 50 columns of the rows that we have.
Yeah.
Clearly was a mammoth task that we actually had to go through. But we manage that. And now what happens is it's become very simple because we upload. And the example I was giving, somebody has a centralized payroll across, all 29, 30 states and all union territories. One single feed actually, puts this data across this 967 or 400 formats and generates the registers on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first part of it. The second part of it clearly is a problem because at times where your PF or your ASIC challans of the remittances, which are in PDF format. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, we are also into auditing a lot of vendors, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is there are challans in the remittances which are uploaded in the system, and the expectation from us is to actually ensure that we go and check those one. Now in PDF, you can't really do anything till the time we have an OCR or an ICR, mm-hmm. where actually it starts reading. Now it's a scanned image, we can still do it. But suppose you have taken a photo of it, sometimes mm-hmm. it becomes difficult. So we have actually implemented AIs and RPA tools, which actually fetches the data from your wave sheet, which is an Excel, and then it starts comparing it with what is uploaded. Do we have 100% accuracy at this point? I would say no. Right, but we have reached a stage where we are trying to eliminate something which is going to be more manual, and the risk is far more when you are doing it manually, and the errors could be far more. Right, so that is the piece that we are trying to eliminate, and we're reaching there very soon.
Well, it's interesting because the kind of tools that you have developed internally, obviously you look at more from a labor law or secretarial compliances standpoint. But the same tools have a wide amount of applications, in things like underwriting and things like loan origination systems, etc. Is that temptation there internally to also look at those segments, or you would rather be a specialist? And the thing is, I think the domain that you are in personally is a bigger white space. Most of the players are probably on the other end of the spectrum. What's your thought process on that?
Nikhil, I don't think so. We are going to restrict ourselves only to labor law. But the point was today, the labor law compliance management in India has been, if you realize, very unstructured so far.
Yeah.
Okay. And there are only a handful of national level players that are there.
Yeah.
The current industry, the way it used to function was, by these mom and pop shops or the local consultants that were there.
Right.
I think it's evolving to a stage where now people prefer a national level player because they know these are the people who are aware of all the state laws across the country rather than depending only on one consultant knowing something about that particular state.
Got it.
Okay. And we realize that almost 80-90% of this market is currently untapped in India as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. Our focus is currently obviously there. But in the next year or two, we clearly wanted to get into that complete RegTech space where we're talking about financial compliances, regular, secretarial, admin, everything.
Right,
and that's obviously which manages that on a from pure management standpoint. Execution is something that we focus on beyond labor law at this point.
Understood. And obviously that's a interesting temptation, right? But is there also a temptation to deploy the same logic or the same tech backbone into international geographies as well? Because it's higher margin business, I suspect, when you're sort of looking at some of the Western markets and you don't really need a physical presence there, right? I mean, it's a SaaS-based offering. So is that temptation there as well?
No. So, Sharad, I'll be very honest, actually. It's not that there are tools not available for managing international compliances, okay? Mm-hmm. But our focus from the beginning has been the execution part and not just the SaaS part, right?
Yeah.
While in labor, we are talking about giving this on SaaS and it can be managed because there's an execution engine which is there at the back end. All these other tools which are available in the market are typically only the management tools. So it actually, you can upload the document or it tells you what level of compliances you need to do. Okay. It doesn't do that compliances. And that's the key difference between us and those tools. Do we intend to go to international market? The aspirations would be, but as I said, currently there's so much to cover in India itself and under the labor law space and the other aspects of compliances. That's not something that is clearly in our radar immediately.
Well, moving on to looking at things from a more business standpoint, you have clocked around 350 crores of revenues. Could you give us a bit of color in terms of the, split of customers? What's the typical customer profiles that you have? Who are responsible for large shares of your revenue? I mean, I'm also wondering that there must be very small companies who are geographically not that spread out. It's only once they reach a certain level from a staging standpoint where provider or a vendor like yourself becomes relevant for them. So number one is just if you could give a sense on that. Secondly, also could you give us a sense on how big is the SaaS, contribution in the total versus the staffing and other segments that you have?
So Nikhil, the way our industry works, so we'll close to, I think about 380 crores is what we'll probably close this, right?
Right.
But the segregation between the three divisions of the businesses that we have, or rather I'll say two, we'll leave aside the payroll processing part.
Yeah.
The compliance, the large chunk comes from the staffing business at this point.
Right.
Okay. The reason being the top line for any of this business, especially in staffing, comes with the salary base as well.
Right.
So we have close to about 15,000 people working differently for different clients. And I don't want to, at this point, segregate even the compliance SaaS and compliance services, because at this point, we bundle everything together. Okay. And I said, SaaS piece is yet evolving. So we don't have, two large clients at this point who are using SaaS because they expect services from us, and that's all the engagement.
Right.
But the large piece, I would say almost 80% of the thing at this point is from the staffing business, mm-hmm. or about 70%, and the rest comes from the compliance part. Right. At this point, that's the two segregations that we have.
And customer-wise, I mean, sectorally?
Yeah. We are spread across almost 28, 29 industries that we serve. Okay. And we serve almost 2,200 locations in India.
Right.
The spread, again, is very, from a compliance standpoint, NBFCs on the fintech side could be a little more.
Right.
The manufacturing is now picking up. Right. And, from a staffing side, I think we deal with almost all the, four top level houses in the country.
Right.
So that's how the spread is typically.
Right. And typically, like at the bottom end, from a size standpoint, these companies would be what, like SMEs doing like 50 to 100 CR type of top line? That's where the journey starts?
We do. It's not that we refrain ourselves from talking to startups as well.
Right.
Just that, at that point, startups do not reach out to you till the time they reach a particular maturity stage, right?
Yeah.
So you're right. Maybe that's the level we usually look at. And
I mean, I guess on the startups end also, it will probably be like a post-Series A event, right? Once they're hitting like something between 5 to 10 million.
Not just post-Series A, it could be slightly before that or around that period because they want them to be compliant as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they come to us making sure that we ensure that they are compliant, and then they go for fundraising too. I mean, that's something which is very commonly seen by us.
Right. And how do you view the competitive universe here? Who are the, and that can be out of India as well. Like, are there any companies that you think are, have really cracked this space well outside India, which you'd like to emulate? And within India, any companies that you are also watching very closely?
Yeah, so I mean, I will still refrain from giving the names, Nikhil, at this point, but there are, I would say we are probably amongst the three top national players, okay? And we could be about the second one if I'm not wrong, okay? And I'm not talking purely from a revenue standpoint, I'm talking purely from a reach standpoint as well. And the way we are recognized in
the. But this is within the labor law segment, right?
Within the labor law. And I'm talking only about the labor law, because staffing is clearly such, an evolved business, for example. There are, Team Leads and Quests of this world which are there for a while now. And we don't compete with them for the reason that, we do only niche products. We don't do, the blue-collared staffing as well.
Right.
Right. So I was talking only about the compliance point of view. And there are other players too. But from a technology side, which is clearly the USP that we are talking about, and the capability for us to do an execution right up to a Gram Panchayat level, or 2,200 locations, is the way we are differentiated.
Right.
So that's the key part which plays an important role. Whenever an evaluation happens for a pan-India present client, the evaluation is whether we have that kind of reach with that state or that district. The technology obviously plays an important role. So that's how it. So maybe 2 to 3 large level players are there in this industry at this point.
Right.
And, just to get your sense, since you're running such a big business, how do you sort of look at margins evolve, EBITDA margins, let's call it? And the reason I ask is, I mean, as the SaaS component picks up, one would imagine margins also pick up with it because sort of costs come down. But when we have such an execution, when we have a big execution element to our core offering, do you think it's margin dilutive? And how do you view it? I mean, I understand at this stage, we have to do it. And it's probably the right thing to do it and execute and become a full service solution. But do you see that in our margin lens? Like, do you think about it as a factor?
Yes, it is. So Sharat, I'll be very honest now, and I'm speaking to really large conglomerates and corporates.
Yeah.
But regardless of how huge the organization is, everybody is price conscious, right?
Yeah.
So while we are talking about negotiations, we have to keep in mind that while majority of the things for us would be, an execution part of it, and enabler is something that we use as a technology piece, the margins don't go too high, in this situation as well. So while anybody tries to look at maybe a 10% or a 15%, that's the most that we can probably consider in a larger deal, not beyond that.
Right.
The reason being, when we talk about growth, and now we have to be a little more conscious about things, because if there are competition pitching for it, while a service level execution is also looked at, usually the L11 pricing is something that, comes in play for the next level evaluation. The contract is usually for a year, 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah.
So we have to be, mindful of one thing, that when we are talking about an X-ray, rather than escalate, right? So that is also something that we have to
touch. Very interesting.
One question.
Kind of margin difference or the way we can, ensure that the cost can be reduced is by technology. So, the evaluation by our tech team and the business team keeps happening on a day-to-day where we talk about the dollar. So, we keep looking at every process to see whether there are any further level of automation that can be done, which eliminates, the manual requirement or manual intervention. And that's the only way we can either keep the same cost, even if it doesn't have an escalation, we are still able to manage that for the next few years.
Understood.
You know, when you said technology from a cost leverage or operating leverage standpoint, there is also a very large data play, right? I mean, you in your own profile, you mentioned that, you look at almost like 40,000 plus pages of Indian labor laws. There are like 20,000 plus legal updates. There is a vernacular element here as well. Multiple states, all being state subjects. So language plays a fairly important role. So is that where the RPA and the AI supposed to be at work in terms of, consistent updation, drawing out insights, looking at anomaly checks? Are those the things which are becoming are more important for you day by day? And number one is now, number two, is there a because, India is a very interesting market, because like me and Sharad often discuss that, like within the startup ecosystem, like if you look at, say, West Coast in the US, it's common for, $3-4 billion worth companies having just 30 people, right? In India, that's never the case. In India, even if as soon as the company hits like unicorn status, that they will have at least 3,500-3,600 employees, correct? So here the getting warm bodies is so far not that big a challenge. So is there also appetite from the client side on more data automation optimization through the use of AI?
I think that's how it's going to be even today. And without naming the client again, I was in Delhi for 3 days. There are two clients I met yesterday, really large in nature. The only thing, and when I was showing them the tool, the only thing they asked me, this is good, great tool that you have, but there are at least four things that they pointed out to me saying that they want it further automated.
Right.
Okay. There are two reasons why they're saying that. Because one, obviously by automation, you mean you'll be deploying less people to manage that particular activity, which means my cost will come down. Two, the moment you try to automate that, the accuracy level goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two things which they're looking at, right? So the first question that you asked for, RPA is going to pay, or artificial intelligence or the system that we are talking about is going to play an extremely critical role, okay? And it's actually hand in hand, because we are talking about not this, we are not running a product company, right? So we actually give domain knowledge as well along with it.
Right.
So there's a huge team in the back end which actually collects this data, which is the domain data, okay? And that data, or the way the processing of the data happens, has to convert into technology.
Right.
So it's a two-way thing that happens. It's not that, okay, I have given a requirement to a technology, a development company, and he's developing it. That has to be so accurate, because while we're talking about a development, the execution is going to come out of that, right? So the important part is domain experts giving the, accurate knowledge to the technology team, and then how it's
Right.
And I think just to kind of, from a closing remarks standpoint, I mean, we don't know firsthand, obviously, if you're looking at fundraising as an option in the future. But developing AI is also getting more and more expensive now, right? I mean, effectively, it is pretty much like a 4 or 5 player market in terms of base technologies. Then obviously, lots of individual use cases kind of come out. Is capital something that you are looking at, from the standpoint of developing the technology stack here? Or the business is generating enough free cash flow to, and obviously you have things like non-dilutive capital, credit, etc., also potentially accessible to you. So how are you viewing fundraising?
Sure. So, Nikhil, I think one first question to be answered, and we have a very strong promoter background, right? Mm-hmm. So, but having said that, raising capital is something that every single organization does,
yeah.
Whether it's today, tomorrow. It could be either through a private equity player, or it could be through listing tomorrow, whatever. So that's always going to be required. And for us, the growth is not just... So we are looking at both inorganic and organic, right? While we are talking about inorganic as well, we are looking at acquisitions. And for that, you'll obviously need money.
Right.
And we're talking about acquisitions because we are talking about synergies that are there in the industry. And there could be certain things that we may not need to develop if it's available in the market and we can grow from.
Yeah.
So both the ways we are talking about, and at some point, yes, and I would not deny that we will not need funds to grow as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, I mean, and especially because I think at the scale that you are, and considering this is primarily a business services type of a play, probably like a mid market or a growth focused PE from a financial investor standpoint is something. Obviously on your radar. Thank you so much, Sandesh, for taking the time out. This was extremely insightful. This is not a sector that we cover very, very frequently. So it also broadens our understanding, and all, I'm sure does the same for our listeners. And we'll obviously be watching you from the sidelines and wish you larger and more significant milestones in the future. And with that, this is Nikhil Arora with me, Sharad Tupran, signing off.